This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. We're online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Did you realize appliances account for 30% of our household energy use? Kate Hayhoe says if you'd like to get the most bang out of your energy buck, take a look at the appliances in the kitchen and think about how you use them. She's interested in making our kitchens and tables greener by conserving fuel and water. Today we're going to talk about achieving energy savings in the kitchen and consider what Kate calls our cookprint. Kate Hayhoe is the author most recently of Cooking Green, Reducing Your Carbon Footprint in the Kitchen, the New Green Basics Way. And she is our guest this afternoon. Listeners, I look forward to your phone calls for our guest. Your questions and comments are invited. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Kate Hayhoe is the author of 8 books. She's also the founding editor of www.globalgourmet.com and www.newgreenbasics.com. A finalist for a James Beard Award, her previous books include Great Bar Food at Home and the Stubbs Barbecue Cookbook. Kate Hayhoe's new book, Cooking Green, is available in paperback. It is published on recycled paper with vegetable-based inks by Lifelong Books, an imprint of DeCapo Press. Again, our phone number is 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Kate Hayhoe, good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Celeste, and thank you for your listeners coming in.
Okay. Well, talk with us a little bit here at the outset about cookprint. What is that exactly? How do you define it?
Well, the cookprint consists of the entire chain of resources used to create the foods you eat and the waste produced in the process. So it encompasses everything from the farm and the field to the factory to the packaging to the trucks that take it to wherever you're buying it from, whether it's a farmer's market or a supermarket. And it's the transportation that gets it from there to your home. And then once it gets in your home, where are you storing it? In a refrigerator or an icebox or in the freezer or in the pantry? Plus, it also incorporates the amount of resources, say the water and the fuel that you use, and the waste produced in the process.
Okay. Now, how did you come to coin this term, cookprint?
Well, you know, we've been living with the term carbon footprint for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that wasn't adequate because it really doesn't encompass everything. You know, there's a lot of elements that are going into climate and global problems that have nothing to do with just carbon there. So I wanted something that was a lot more encompassing. Plus, you know, when you cook, cooking is a friendly, it's a warm, fuzzy sort of thing. And to me, the term carbon footprint was just so cold that I think that, you know, it has that boomerang effect with people.
Mm.
You know, rather than inviting them to participate in something that's positive, sometimes I think the term carbon footprint alienates people.
Yeah. Another interesting term that you use that I think also is good because it's so flexible, and this herein lies the problem in part, is that all this stuff is so much in flux and you have to kind of keep on top of it to make the best decisions. And that is, you use the word ecovore.
Yes. You know, it came to my, you know, realization that, you know, every time you go to the fish market, you have to keep aware of, you know, well, salmon that was, you know, in abundance last year, this year may not be in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So an ecovore is someone who kind of keeps all of these things in mind. They're not hard and fast rules. As you said, it's flexible. Food, of course, is impacted by climate. And so as the situation with our food sources changes, we also need to be aware of what's happening to the food supplies. You know, if there's a world rice shortage, for instance, maybe we can opt for eating something else other than rice.
Before we go too much further, would you share one example with us of something we could do today or tomorrow to reduce our footprint?
Sure. One of the biggest things that you can do, well, there's two things, and one of them has to do with eating less meat, and then the other one has to do, since you started talking about appliances, the other one has to do with not using your oven. And there's a reason why I call ovens the Humvees of the kitchen, because up to 94% of an oven's fuel is wasted. Which is an astounding. I mean, if you had a vehicle that, you know, just wasted 94% of the gasoline that you put into it, you wouldn't drive that vehicle. What happens with an oven is most of that fuel goes into heating the walls of the oven, heating your kitchen. You know how it is in the summer where you just don't even want to turn the oven on because it's so hot. Well, that's wasted fuel. So if you can do, and a lot of these suggestions are in the book, things like cooking on your cooktop instead, that's more energy efficient than cooking in the oven. And I'll use an example like stews and braises. A lot of people will do a stew or a braise in the oven. Well, you can do that on top of the stove in a heavy pot just as much, and you're going to be saving a boatload of fuel by doing it that way.
But you do say, you know, treat your oven as a luxury, but, you know, go ahead and use it, but use it more intelligently.
Yes, be conscious, you know, be aware of what you're doing. I mean, I don't want to sound like, oh, to put so many rules down that people aren't going to keep them in mind. But, you know, it's a matter of making choices. If you turn your oven on, for instance, put more than one thing in it. You know, you can simultaneously bake, and that will make better use of the fuel that you're consuming.
And you write about something you call blue oven strategies.
Yes.
What are they?
Oh, that's another technique where you can stretch the fuel. For instance, if you're going to, what you do is you make use of the fuel by turning the oven off earlier and letting that residual heat that's already built up in the oven continue to cook the food, and you can also put certain items into a cold oven and skip the preheat, thereby making use of the fuel that would normally go into preheating. And, you know, one thing that we always do is we follow a recipe that says preheat the oven. The oven is, bell goes off, it's already preheated, but we're not ready with the food to go in it. So it continues to churn fuel out, you know, for no practical purpose. Well, using a blue oven strategy means that, and I'll give you an example here, which is in the book, but it applies to anyone, lasagna. You can put lasagna in a cold oven. You don't need to preheat the oven. Then the other thing is, by the time, you know, most lasagnas take about an hour to bake. Well, you can turn the fuel off about 15 minutes early, and it will continue to cook from that residual heat, but you're saving a lot of fuel in the meantime.
Can you give us another example of a recipe that we might do with a blue strategy?
Well, you know, again, there's like baking. A lot of times when you're baking, you really do need to put it into a hot oven. But at the same time, you can turn the fuel off earlier. Certain cakes, certain pies, things of that nature, you can turn the fuel off earlier, and there's enough heat in there to continue cooking them.
And we want to make sure that we're not probably also, maybe we want to keep an eye on the temperature in the oven. Is it useful to use a thermometer inside the oven?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you want to keep, you know, monitoring, because a lot of the thermostats aren't terribly accurate there. And I want to go back one second because you had asked for another example.
Okay.
I want to give you one other example, which is also in the book, and it's cooking a rare roast beef where I do start it in a hot oven, but it only goes for about 15 minutes, then I turn the fuel off and let it sit in there for an hour to 2 hours, and it turns out absolutely perfectly rare roast beef, medium rare. And that's saving about an hour and a half worth of food fuel.
Mm. Is that safe?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because if you're dealing with a whole piece of meat, and you do want to use like a meat thermometer to help register the temperature, but when you're dealing with a whole piece of meat versus, say, ground beef, a whole piece of meat, the bacteria is on the outside of the meat. It's only when you start penetrating and introducing air and other pathogens, then you have more to be concerned about. But I always recommend using a meat thermometer to gauge as well. And speaking of thermometers, another good thing is to have a thermometer for your refrigerator and for your freezer. A lot of people, you know, I talked about the oven as being the Humvee of the kitchen. Well, the refrigerator is a huge guzzler of fuel, but, you know, none of us really want to live without refrigerators. So the one thing that we can do is we can optimize the temperature of the refrigerator using a thermometer there. And certain foods stay fresher at different temperatures. For instance, the lower the temperature for meat, so you can make them last 2 or 3 days longer. So consequently, you'll have less waste. You'll be able to do fewer trips to the grocery store, things of that nature. By putting a thermometer, you can measure what the temperature of the overall refrigerator is, and then also different areas of the refrigerator inside it as well.
Yeah, and you use freezer packs in the refrigerator.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as I was saying, you know, meat will last longer at 31 degrees. So if you take your meat bin and you drop in some of those blue freezer packs, the meat will stay, it'll drop that meat bin down, you know, a few degrees, and you'll be able to stretch the lifespan of the meat that you have in there.
Hmm. Really interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Kate Hayhoe. She's the author most recently of Cooking Green, Reducing Your Carbon Footprint in the Kitchen, the New Green Basics Way. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455 is our toll-free number. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. How did you begin thinking about refashioning the way you cook?
Well, you know, I've been writing cookbooks for a long time, but it became apparent to me, and I'm as the editor of the very first food and cooking website on the internet, globalgourmet.com, I get review copies of books all the time, and it just became apparent to me that when people were talking about being greener with food, they pretty much were limiting the scope of the issue to buying local and buying organic, which are, I have to say, you know, great methods. I mean, we do want to follow those practices there. But at the same time, I knew from cooking that there's a lot more that you can do, and that's shaving off the amount of fuel that you use and cutting back the amount of water that you waste. I live in Texas, and we've been going through a horrible drought for the last couple years. So water, and we live in an area where we're on well water. We don't get city water when the well runs dry. You know, you got to face reality. So it just became very apparent to me that there were a lot of other things that could be done, but nobody was really talking about them.
Mm-hmm.
And also another factor is, you know, as I said, I live in Texas. And when it's 100-degree weather outside, you really don't want to be turning much fuel on in the kitchen at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, just a lifestyle thing made me more conscious of what I was doing. And I said, well, hey, let's put it out there and share it with other people because it makes a lot of difference.
Mm. Let's take a call from a listener in Urbana now. Line one, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. You were talking about the fact that ovens use so much energy and wasted energy, and I just wanted to know, how about broiling? Is broiling energy efficient because you're just putting the meat under there and it's a direct cook quick thing?
Well, you're still using a lot of fuel because in order to broil efficiently, you've got to get that heat way up there, you know? You got to turn your oven on to like 400, 500 degrees. You are using less fuel over time there, but it does take a lot of fuel to ramp up and get to that point. One of the things that I do recommend as far as an alternative is toaster ovens. They've got great toaster ovens these days, and broiling in that, because it's such a smaller space and retains the heat in a smaller area, is a great alternative to turning the broiler on in your full-fledged oven or turning your full-fledged oven on.
Okay. I just wondered, because I knew you were, like, putting the meat directly underneath the flame, so I didn't know whether that would, you know.
Yeah, and here's another alternative is pan grilling, because basically what you're doing is that's the same, you know, with a broiler, you're cooking with the heat from above.
Mm-hmm.
Put it into a skillet, and you're cooking with the heat from below. And if you have a really good grill pan that gets nice and hot, you're going to get that same effect.
Well, I have a griddle on top of my stove, so it would be better to use the griddle.
Yes.
Then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank
That's
you.
All I had. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
That was a good question.
Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show. I would like to say that the microwave is my best friend.
Yay.
I love my microwave. And I have a big enough one that I can put a 9x13 pan in there, and that's how I do scalloped potatoes. Who needs an oven?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then when I turn on my oven to bake a chicken, I bake four.
That's another great tip is, you know, cook multiple items. Stretch that fuel. Any way that you can stretch that fuel is a great way of going greener in the kitchen.
And I love my electric skillet, and that's how I do my chuck roast. And if I use my toaster oven in the summer, I stick it outside.
Very good, very good, because then you're not heating up your kitchen and forcing you to turn on the air conditioner.
Amen to that. So that's my 2 cents. Thank you.
Oh, keep it up. You're doing great.
Thanks
right.
for the call this
right,
afternoon.
Bye-bye.
Other questions, comments, tips are invited for our guest, Kate Hayhoe. Join us with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Another caller in Champaign, line one, hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Are convection ovens better than, say, a standard electric oven, energy usage-wise?
Absolutely. And I write about this in the book because for years I was afraid to turn on the convection option of my oven because I was afraid, I would do something wrong, you know. I wouldn't cook something long enough or it would burn or it would just be too complicated for my little brain to figure out the process. No way. Convection ovens will shave off about 25% of the amount of fuel that you use. For those who aren't familiar with them, they circulate the hot air in the oven so that it's not just blowing from one point. It's blowing around the food in all areas. So you're cooking the food not just from one or two sides. You're cooking it from the entire
mm-hmm.
surface area. So to answer your question, yes, if you have convection mode, use convection mode whenever you can. You'll shave off about 25% of the fuel, either by lowering the temperature or lowering the amount of time, shortening the amount of time that you have to cook it.
How about in inductive cookers?
Oh, I love those. Induction burners are coming down in price. For those who aren't familiar with them, and it sounds really wacky. What's your name?
I'm Michael.
Michael. It sounds really wacky, doesn't it, to tell people that you're cooking on a burner that is using magnets?
Mm-hmm.
But that's exactly the way that it works. Is if you rub your hands together, for instance, you feel that heat, and that's caused by friction. So what happens with an induction burner is it works with the ferrous metal in piece of cookware, and it makes friction by rubbing those molecules together within the piece of cookware to give off heat. And that heat is what actually cooks the food.
Yeah, I have an induction hot plate, which I bought because in the summer I My house has a screened-in porch, and I think it's kind of silly to pay Illinois or Ameren IP to burn gas or generate electricity to heat something up, and of course the air conditioning's on, so I'm paying them twice. I'm paying them for the fuel to cook my food, and then I'm paying them to take the excess heat and moisture away. So I cook out on this screened-in porch with a combination of I've got a great big it's a two-burner propane cook stove or something that's I use that for something that I'm going to cook rather rapidly and under high heat.
Right.
But it doesn't simmer very well. It's hard to control the flame for simmering. So I bought this induction cooktop, and it works wonderfully. With the single exception is that I had to buy almost an entirely new collection of cookware because it won't work with stainless steel. You either have to find steel pans, which are kind of hard to find anymore and aren't the greatest things in the world, or use cast iron.
Well,
which they work fine with cast iron, but any kind of stainless steel blend, they just don't work worth a darn. And on top of, last question, I'll get off. How about charcoal cooking? I've often wondered about how eco-friendly that was. And yeah. you fire the thing up and it burns, and when you're done with it, well, you just have to let the coals go out, and that's it. You get that big blast of heat, and then it's done for.
Yeah.
And I thank you.
Thanks
for the call.
You've got some great points here. I'll start with the charcoal and then move back to induction for a minute. But on the charcoal, you know, the biggest thing is the emissions that are created from creating charcoal, period. You're going to be better off using propane or electric from a green standpoint. If you are going to, and remember, I wrote the Stubbs Barbecue Cookbook, so I know a lot about the love of charcoal, real charcoal. Anyway, you're going to be better off using solid charcoal rather than charcoal briquettes, because the briquettes go through a whole other process of compressing them, and sometimes they have additives and things like that. So they're the least desirable way of cooking. You also never want to use charcoal lighter fluid because that's just full of emissions. You're better off starting your charcoal in a charcoal chimney, one of those things that looks like a coffee can with a handle. And then, like I said, use real hardwood charcoal. There's less emissions that go into creating it there. Use a grill that's fairly efficient in terms of the amount of charcoal you need to get it hot. That's another thing. Going back to induction and the pans there, you can get clad pans. Sometimes they're like steel on the outside with a ferrous metal, and a ferrous metal is anything that you can determine if they'll work with induction burners by putting a magnet to them. If the magnet sticks, it's got ferrous metal in it. So cast iron, some of the clad pans have like a layer inside that is ferrous there, and they will work. And one of the other things that's really great about the induction burner is that because it's just sending this magnetic field up through the cookware, as soon as you turn the cooker off, the cooktop is completely cool. It's not getting hot. It's the pan that you're using that gets hot. So if you take that off, you're not going to burn yourself. Consequently, it's much easier to clean the cooktop. And as far as portability, you can get the single burners. I, like Michael, use mine outside on our big old Texas deck and watching the deer all the time.
Mm. Let's take another call now. Line 2, listener in Muhammad. Hi.
Hello. I bought a thing over the Internet, which I had never heard of previous to doing a search on the Internet, and it is called a Zojirushi thermal cooking pot. And I really like it. I haven't had it for too long yet, but it comes with a book that teaches you how to cook with it. It has an inner pan, and you put that pan on the stove and get your stew or soup or whatever started, and cook it about halfway. Then you put it in this big thermal pot and seal the lid and just leave it there for as much as 8 hours, and it'll still be at eating temperature in 8 hours. And
yes,
it really works.
They are, and I also mentioned this in the book because it really is based on, and there's a couple of different people that make pans like these thermal cooking pans. But you know what it's based on? It's based on an age-old practice called hay box cooking. And it was especially popular during World War II in England, and where people were trying to conserve fuel, and they would take you know, any type of cabinet or box or anything like that, line it with straw, line it with hay, do exactly what you talked about, cook something until it's partially cooked and hot, and then put it in this insulated chamber, cover it, and then just let it continue cooking. They do also use that same sort of process in some of the underdeveloping nations around the world now. They're teaching some of these places how to best conserve their fuel by either and some of them have already done this for centuries, but by creating some type of insulated situation, partially cooking the food and then covering it and letting it sit until it's thoroughly cooked.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest today, Kate Hayhoe, author of Cooking Green, Reducing Your Carbon Footprint in the Kitchen, the New Green Basics Way. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a phone call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, we go to line three, Champagne. Hi.
Good morning, or afternoon even. I'm used to talking to David. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Two very quick questions, and I'll get off the air. One, out of the three options that are practical for you and me right now, which are a teapot on the stove, or the kettle on the stove, rather, microwaving and buying an electric kettle, which is the most fuel-efficient way of heating water for tea? And then second, just like overall, in terms of just carbon emissions over the life cycle, which is generally more efficient in terms of a stove? Gas-powered stove, regular electric coil, electric induction, that sort of thing. So I'll hang up and take my answer off the air. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks.
Great questions. I'll start with the last one first. In terms of gas versus electric, it actually depends on where your electricity is sourced. If you're using solar electricity, that's by far the best because you're not using any natural resources or spewing out any emissions there. But if your electricity is coming from, you know, coal, or if it's coming from a power plant, water-based power plant somewhere along the line, what happens in creating that electricity is that you're using a certain amount of energy to create that electricity. You're losing more of that energy than in using natural gas. So it's kind of like apples and oranges in a way, and it really just depends on where your electricity is sourced. And I know that a lot of power companies these days in various places around the United States give you an option of where you buy your particular power from. Some of them have green options. So that's something to check into. Then the other question had to do with the three options of boiling water. And I love this question because an electric teapot became my new best friend a few years ago. There's a lot of ways that I use it for things other than boiling water for tea. A good electric teapot is a closed unit, and it generally has some type of heating element in the center. So it heats much more efficiently. The water is getting its heat source, and it's kind of, like I said, it's a closed system, so there's not a lot of heat that's emanating into the room there. An electric kettle is a teapot on the stove requires, first of all, you're wasting a lot of energy that is seeping into the room from the burner. Whatever type of burner you're using, you're going to waste a lot of energy there. So I really don't like cooking the teapot of water on the stove.
Microwaving, you know, the funny thing about microwaves is that it takes almost as much time to boil a cup of water in the microwave as it does on the cooktop. So in answer to your question, an electric teapot is going to be your most energy-efficient friend, and they boil water so quickly you would hardly believe it. So what I do is instead of boiling water in a saucepan on the stove as much as possible, I boil it first in the tea kettle. And then we were talking earlier about blue ovens. Well, what I call a green flame type of cooking is another way of using less fuel for cooktop type of cooking. So in terms of blanching vegetables, and we're in this like wonderful vegetable season now, instead of blanching vegetables in a boiling pot of water on the stove, I put them into like a low Pyrex type of dish, pour boiled water from my electric kettle over them, cover them with like a baking sheet or something to keep the heat in, and let them sit for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, whatever it takes, and they're turned out perfectly. Summer squash and zucchini take almost no time, thinly sliced, and they just taste so much fresher that way, too.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Kate Hayhoe, author of Cooking Green. Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign County on line one. Hi.
Hi. I appreciate your nuanced response to the electrical question, because it's quite true that you have to look at the source. There's also some nuance about opting to buy something green is because you have to look at the one should look at the transmission losses, because if you're buying, you know, solar electricity from Arizona, you lose so much in the long lines that...
That's a good point.
Yeah. I wanted to know about what you've studied in the way of direct cooking by electricity. I don't do it myself, but I know a large family who have some Irish in them, who cook their potatoes en masse in a solar cooker of some kind. I've seen people do this through the years at different times, and you know, it's something like potatoes, they cook a bunch up and store them and then use them in different dishes, and so they can wait for the optimal hot, bright day. And so I was wondering if you studied that. And, well, as long as I'm I know that the UN has been trying to introduce solar cookery around the world. They're also getting people in lesser developed countries to make sort of fairly primitive but, you know, well-designed clay ovens. So for them, cooking in an oven is a step up, because they need much less firewood to keep an oven hot and then just cooking on an open flame. So that's may not be too applicable to us. I mean, one could maybe build a clay chimney in one's backyard, I suppose. But I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. You've got some great questions with your listeners here. I love it. I have a solar oven, and it's a very cool solar oven that also has an electrical backup. So if you get caught and all of a sudden there's a thunderstorm that comes up and you lose your sun, you can plug this little baby in and it will continue to operate by, you know, burning actual electricity. But if someone's really interested in solar ovens, they're terrific. And there's a lot of ways that you can make your own. You just go out to Google. I've got some resources, I think, in the book that talk about, you know, making your own and websites and things like that. But they are great, and they're not that difficult to figure out how to cook in them. You mentioned potatoes. Potatoes are wonderful. Just about anything that you would – here's a rule of thumb. Just about anything that you would be able to cook in a slow cooker, and any recipe that you would pretty much use as a slow cooker recipe, you can adapt to using in a solar oven. So they're not they kind of go back to the whole idea of the hay box cooking, is that, you know, there were people that were doing these types of things long before we got civilized. And solar ovens are really a great alternative. I wish more people, you know, were doing that. Of course, you know, you have to plan a little bit ahead there, but they do work great. And since we just talked a bit about potatoes, mm-hmm. I want to mention that
instead of cooking baked potatoes in an oven,
mm-hmm.
one alternative is to put them in a crock pot. Crock pots use only about slow cookers, crock pots, whatever you want to call them, use only about like a light bulb's worth of electricity, but they're great for baked potatoes.
Tell us how to do that.
You just put your baked potato, prick your baked potatoes, you know, a couple times, put them in the cooker, turn the cooker on, and I'm trying to remember how long, I don't have it off the top of my head, how long to leave them in there on low or high, but the recipe's in
It's in here
the book.
Somewhere. I'll look for it while we take another call. How about mm-hmm. that? Another call, a listener in Rockford, line four, hi.
Howdy.
Hi.
I just have a comment about, other than cooking, about refrigeration. For example, I have a refrigerator that uses heat. It's called a Crosley Icy Ball, and I can heat one end of it and put the other end in a bucket of water for about a half an hour. And then I switch ends and put the cold end in an ice chest, and it refrigerates for 24 hours. No electricity. You can use heat from charcoal or an electricity or gas flame or kerosene flame, anything you want. And then I also have my folks' old kerosene-powered refrigerator.
Now, is this refrigerator something that you bought on the market?
Yeah, it was on the market back in the 20s.
Ah.
And there's still a few of them around, and it's completely sealed unit, so there's no wearing parts to wear out on it if it's cared for reasonably.
That sounds fascinating. I'm not familiar with that.
And it's been suggested by some that could be used in the remote areas of where there's no electricity or gas lines available for other forms of refrigeration.
Hmm. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, and this is your main refrigerator?
No. I it's an antique. I have it as a hobby, but I've used it, and I've known about it for years, and I finally found one at the flea market.
And what's it called again?
Crosley Icy Ball. The Crosley Radio Company made them.
Wow.
And so you can look at that up on the Internet and find out about it. It's kind of interesting.
That sounds terrific. Well, I appreciate knowing about that.
Yeah, it uses an old invention what the scientist Faraday developed early refrigeration that way. And then the French built a form of this, and then it was copied in Canada and then the United States.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting. You know, talking about refrigerators, here's something that a lot of people don't realize is that your refrigerator and your freezer are both more energy efficient when they're full. And the reason is that, you know, there's less air for the motor to try and fill with cooler air. So if you are, and I was on a radio show talking to New Yorkers last week, and I was saying, well, you know, a lot of people in New York have empty refrigerators because everyone eats out all the time. Students do that too. So the thing is, if you have a refrigerator that tends to have a lot of empty space in it, fill up water jugs or, you know, big containers of water and put them in there. Your efficiency will boost up there. And the other thing is that, you know, if you do go out and get wild and crazy and buy a bunch of groceries, you can just take the water out. It won't go bad. Just, you know, take it out and fill the refrigerator with groceries.
Sure, yeah.
Well, thanks for calling this afternoon.
All right, thank you.
Okay,
bye.
Take care. Next, we take a call from a listener in Chicago on line one. Hi.
Thank you. Another alternative heating, cooking your food, mentioned in Mother Jones, Mother Earth, one of those Earth magazines, was your automobile or a vehicle that you can put a particular container on the radiator, that is on the engine block or other facilities that are very hot, and over time you will find you could cook your roast or whatever efficiently with the heat that's emanating from your engine. I thought I'd mention that, and there are other applications about conserving energy, and I was thinking of appliances like the refrigerator and TV and computer. What would you say is a safe time to, say, unplug your refrigerator before it goes into a defrost or a meltdown situation, as long as you don't open your door?
I really wouldn't recommend that as an energy efficient, you know, I mean, you run the risk of food spoilage, which...
Well, I mean, like for a few hours it can survive without defrosting and...
Yeah, but you know, I you know, the amount of energy then that will be required to ramp it back up to speed, I don't know that that would be something that I would recommend.
And then, in terms of conserving heat, there's those who recommend a raw diet, so you wouldn't have to cook at all. Thank you very much.
That's true. That's true. And that, you know, let's talk about food for a minute here. Raw diets, you know, are great. The other thing is, which a lot of people already know, is that eating meat consumes it, just the number of natural resources that go into creating meat, plus the emissions that come from methane and other things, is kind of astounding. So the more that you can cut meat out of your diet, if you're a carnivore or an omnivore, the more you're going to be contributing to living greener.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Kate Hayhoe is our guest this afternoon. She's the author of Cooking Green, and I'm going to take another call here in just a second. But to get back to the potatoes in the slow cooker, there's a recipe in her book for lemon mint potato salad, slow cooker style. And what she does is she takes 1 3/4 to 2 pounds of red potatoes, 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and she scrubs them, and then you leave them wet. You poke each one with a fork twice on opposite sides, place in the crock of a slow cooker, cover and cook on high 2 to 2.5 hours until just tender when poked with a skewer. And I think probably you can guess the rest of the recipe a little bit. It's going to involve some lemon juice, some olive oil, and she has a little red onion and some Italian parsley, a little bit of mint, and freshly ground black pepper. That's an easy way to make a potato salad.
Yes, thank you for looking that up for me. You know, we write these books, and it's just hard to carry everything around in our brains for so long. But, you know, the just think, compared to boiling a pot of water on the stove and how much heat is emanated, which heat meaning energy, is emanated from a boiling pot of water, you can see already how much you're saving by using a slow cooker.
Yeah. Now, I like all kinds of potatoes. This recipe is for red potatoes. What about russets?
Yeah, you could do the same thing.
Okay.
It's the same sort of thing.
And does the russet turn out to be akin to what the result you would get it from baking it in an oven? Or is it a little moister?
It's going to be a little bit moister because your slow cooker is not a dry heat,
right.
It's a moist heat.
Right.
But, you know, if you're going to do something like make hash, you know, as opposed to doing baked potatoes with, you know, slathered with butter and sour cream and all of that sort of stuff, it's another way of doing it. And, you know, let me also say that, you know, since we're talking about potatoes and potato salad season, one of the green flame methods is to boil your potatoes for a certain amount of time and then turn the heat off and just let them sit in a covered pot in hot water for about 15 or 20 minutes, and they will continue to cook.
Yeah.
You don't need to have them boiling the whole time. And the other thing a lot of people don't realize is that rapidly boiling water is the same temperature as slowly boiling water.
And the other thing is, I would say that if you're going to mash those potatoes, that gentle cooking is nice too, because they don't go to pieces on you while you turn your back.
That's right.
Yeah. Let's take another call now. Listener in Urbana. Line 2, hi.
Hi. I'd like to compliment the guests for making a very important issue in a very light manner. And in that spirit, I may want to make a tongue-in-cheek suggestion that since half of us are overweight, some of us way too overweight, maybe just reducing food intake would be a big contribution towards green cooking.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, that is another thing. You know, we have also
so many people on the planet and so much reason, so many reasons for many of us to lose weight. Here's another motivation.
I have one last question. I can give you a minute here, Kate.
Yeah.
Putting aside the energy savings and the planet's health, have there been benefits to you as a cook going down this pathway?
Yeah, well, I save time in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the food that I cook turns out better because I'm not overcooking things
mm-hmm.
by following these kind of passive cooking techniques. So saving time, saving energy in terms of electricity, and saving water. I mean, we didn't even touch hardly on the water conservation things, but as I point out in the book, there are hundreds of tips in this book about how to painlessly adjust your lifestyle. You're not going to feel anything in your lifestyle in terms of, I'm deprived or anything like that by doing these tips. It's just what I call the new green basics, a whole new way of thinking about how you cook things normally.
Okay, there we have to leave it. Kate Hayhoe, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. You have been terrific, Celeste, and your guests have asked just the most brilliant questions. I am so happy to have been here.
Okay. Our listeners are a terrific group. Kate Hayhoe has been our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. Her last name is spelled H-E-Y, like hay, and then ho, like hoe your garden, H-O-E. She is the author of Cooking Green, Reducing Your Carbon Footprint in the Kitchen, the New Green Basics Way. The book is available in paperback. It's published on recycled paper. And our guest this afternoon, the author of 8 books now, she's also the founding editor of www.globalgourmet.com and www.newgreenbasics.com.